The Covenant and the Blueprint, Commentary for the September 6, 2025 Sabbath School Lesson by Stephen Terry, Director, Stillwaters Ministry, www.visitstillwaters.com. I will give you a new heart and put a new spirit in you. I will remove from you your heart of stone and give you a heart of flesh, Ezekiel 36. Verse 26. When I became a Seventh-day Adventist over a half a century ago, it was all about the law, and everything seemed a simple case of black and white to me. In fact, when I finally attended Walla Walla College, a professor remarked about how I had a marked inability to see anything as gray spiritually. I was baptized at the El Paso Central Church while in basic training for the Army. The baptismal vows were not as extensive as they are today, but they were clear-cut about obedience to the Sabbath, and this immediately brought me into conflict with the military. They expected me to work on Sabbath. The church taught me that I should not. I stuck to my guns on the issue, and because it was wartime, with the conflict in Vietnam, and the Army needed an endless supply of bodies for that meat grinder, they did not push back too hard. Even in Vietnam, I was able to attend church on Sabbath at our mission compound in Saigon. I had enlisted in the Army to be trained as a Russian translator, but they rerouted me to be a combat medic, since I was also questioning carrying a weapon. I was told translators had to carry weapons, but medics did not have to. During the Vietnam War, my non-combatancy was never an issue. But once the war was over, and they no longer needed cannon fodder, my beliefs quickly became a problem. I was punished for Sabbath keeping, and even though I had been promoted in Vietnam while being a non-combatant, I was denied further promotion and had the promotion I had earned stripped from me. There were also planned attempts to take my life, one of which almost succeeded, and I still have the scar from that today. During all of this, the Army contacted the mission president where I was serving and asked if the Sabbath was as important as I was making it out to be. They told my battalion commander that it was not, and I was being extreme. This gave them license to crank up the persecution. Eventually, the Department of the Army at the Pentagon intervened, and I was honorably discharged. The miracles I experienced during my last 6 months in the Army and shortly after discharge confirmed my faith and set me on the path to college and eventually to pastor a three-church district in the Midwest. It turned out the college professor who questioned my willingness to acknowledge gray areas and the mission president who considered my position on the Sabbath to be extreme were not exceptions, but too often the norm within the denomination. The rules within Adventism are parsed by a clergy who often never had to take a meaningful stand for their faith. Raised in Adventist homes, educated in Adventist parochial schools, and employed by Adventism Incorporated, they were never seriously challenged over their faith. While we used to hear of missionaries who had to face such challenges in foreign lands, most of those positions are now filled by indigenous workers, and they're actively creating the same insular systems to allow their children in those countries to grow up free of opposition from the non-Adventist world. We call people to take a stand for the Sabbath, even though it could very well cost them their employment and send their family into poverty, never having had to face such challenges ourselves. Conference presidents make considerable effort to call into ministry those who have never faced such challenges. They want individuals who will fit into the Adventist culture, not those who will challenge it by calling out those who place such burdens on others that they have never had to bear themselves. Compassion and empathy do not grow in safe retreats where the world cannot intrude. They grow in the crucible of affliction. The Apostle Paul, writing to his disciple Timothy, said, "Everyone who wants to live a godly life in Christ Jesus will be persecuted," 2 Timothy 3:12. This begs the question, if we are living lives protected from the world by our parochial schools, by our Adventist culture, employed by Adventism Incorporated, are we really living godly lives, living according to God's will? Just how bad is this problem? One church I attended hired a youth pastor who was committed to outreach to the non-Adventist community surrounding our inner city church. He generated significant interest on the part of the young people in the area. A camping trip for the youth was planned, but not a single Adventist parent would allow their children to participate in the campout if children from the non-Adventist community were allowed to come along. Nonetheless, the youth pastor went forward with a camping trip and remarked later that the non-Adventist children were so well behaved, he would gladly do it again. However, it was clear that outreach and culture were in conflict, and as often happens within Adventism, culture wins out over compassion. As Seventh-day Adventists, we consider ourselves like the wise man who built his house upon the rock, and we see that rock as the answer to every trial. But are we building upon the wrong rock? Are stone tablets from Sinai our rock and not Jesus Christ? Do we hold everyone up to the Decalogue in judgment? If that is what we are taught to do with our own lives, how much more then in our interaction with non-Adventists? The law does not save anyone. It only condemns us to death, according to Galatians 3 verse 11, Romans 3:23, and Romans 6:23. Where, then, do we find life? Only in Jesus Christ, who said, "I am the gate. Whoever enters through me will be saved. They will come in and go out and find pasture. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I have come that they may have life and have it to the full. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep." John 10, verses 9 through 11. The Pharisees considered themselves far more faithful to the commandments than any modern Seventh-day Adventist. Yet they had no problem with murdering Christ. Their hearts had become stone. They arrogantly assumed an authority never given to them based on their strict adherence to the law, even creating myriad man-made rules to help them catch out their own transgressions over even the most trivial of matters. When we consider the parable of the Pharisee and the tax collector in Luke 18, verses 9 through 14, we desire to see ourselves as a humble publican tax collector. But we are more apt to be the Pharisee, seeing ourselves as a righteous person instead of as a sinner we truly are. Our natural response is to cry out in protest, "I am not a murderer, I'm not a thief, and I believe in God." But we transgress in the only way that matters. If we withhold our love from anyone, we are guilty of all, according to James 2, verse 10. I'm not talking about the free love of the sexual revolution of the 1960s. I'm not talking about the romantic love of the medieval world either. I'm talking about love that manifests itself as kindness and compassion toward those in need, and empathy for those who suffer. The Pharisee had no empathy or compassion for the tax collector. He was only thankful that he was not an evil tax collector, but rather was a righteous Pharisee. When we look beyond the walls of our church, are we thankful we are not like those outside the walls? Do we see others as an opportunity to be kind and compassionate, or do we see them as a burden better carried by others, not us? This is the covenant that God calls us to, and the blueprint he consulted as he fashioned our frame. He looked into a mirror and saw love there, according to 1 John 4:8. He decided he wanted humanity to look like that, and created us to be loving also. But we decided we did not trust God, and love died. Fear took its place. With fear came the ocean of tears shed ever since. Even Jesus wept as a result, according to John 11, verses 35 and 36. It does not have to continue that way. We only need to recognize what an unloving, fearful people we are and turn to God that He might change us to be all we were meant to be, loving, kind, and compassionate, and creative in the ways we demonstrate it, just as He was creative when He made us in His image, according to Genesis 1, verse 27. The world has only one thing to offer us, fear. We have been afraid for an extraordinarily long time. It has not served us well. We have not brought an end to wars. We have not done all we could in tackling disease, poverty, and homelessness. Crime has not ended. Faith and hope will bring us into the arms of God, but it is love that will keep us there. 1 Corinthians 13, verse 13. Thank you for listening to this commentary podcast. You can find the written version of this commentary, as well as hundreds more commentaries and podcasts, at our website at www.visitstillwaters.com. You can also find links to books written by the author, as well as other articles and links. Once again, that's www.visitstillwaters.com. May God richly bless you and your family.